Join Aubrey Masango, evenings on 702.
Professor at the Center for Environmental Management at University of the Free State is Professor Anthony Turton, who joins me now. Prof, thank you so much for joining me, and my apologies for slaughtering your surname there. We seem to have a crisis in South Africa in as far as water supply is concerned.
Good evening to you and the listeners. Yes, indeed. When is a crisis not a crisis? Yeah, it's, we certainly are very, very close to the edge, I'm afraid.
We've been having some serious water shortages following an explosion of a power station in Akenhof a few weeks ago that has not been settled, has not been resolved. But I must be also honest and not forget the fact that there are communities that have not had water for the longest of time until it's become normalized. They don't scream and shout anymore because, you know, they've almost been bludgeoned into silence. What is the extent of the water crisis in South Africa, and what is its nature? Because we keep hearing that, oh, use water sparingly. But then there are some people who say, no, it's not a water shortage issue. As much as it is true that South Africa is a water scarce country, it's a maintenance of infrastructure issue. And you and I have had conversations many, many years ago where you were saying, we're going to get into trouble here. Talk to us about the nature of the South African water crisis.
Yes, if I had to describe the water situation in South Africa, I would say that we are seeing systemic failure now, so system-wide failure. When I say system-wide failure, you must appreciate that we've got wastewater systems, the sewage systems, and we've also got potable water systems, and these two things run parallel to each other, and they intersect each other from time to time. So we are having systemic failure in both of those systems. Probably something like 80% of our wastewater works are dysfunctional from either being totally derelict or, let's call it, sort of 50, 60% functional. So that's on the wastewater side. On the freshwater side now, we're starting to see disruptions to supply, certainly a major deviation from the original design parameter, which is a 98% assurance of supply, which means you're allowed to have two disruptions in 100 years. Now, clearly we far off that standard at this moment in time. So that's what's happening in South Africa. And what's also happening is that the rate of failure is now accelerating. So if you had to monitor incidents, let's just say leaks, for example, or breakdowns, and if you plot those on a graph over time, you'll see we're getting more and more of them coming at a faster and faster rate. So in other words, the system failure is accelerating. And if you want to look at it at another level of abstraction, the rate of change is exceeding the capacity of the institutions to cope with that change. So that's kind of, you know, the overhead briefing of what the current situation is like in South Africa.
What fundamentally is the reason for all of this?
I think fundamentally is that there's been so much restructuring going on, and there's been so much partying about, you know, about the spoils of democracy for the select few, and there's been very little thought given to what actually keeps the machinery of the economy going. And that's the boring, mundane things like generators that turn in power stations and the pumps that turn in water supply systems. So it's, if it turns and it needs maintenance, then I'm afraid we've generally done a very bad job at it in South Africa. And it's that cumulative bad job that we've done that is now catching up with us. And it's catching up with us faster and more furiously than ever before.
Give me a sense of what you see happen. In what sorts of time frames?
Well, if we look critically now, I travel around the country a lot, so I get a fairly good insight into what's going on in different parts of the country. So let's start off with Cape Town. Cape Town in 2018 was in deep crisis as day zero was approaching. They made it into the international media for the wrong reasons. There was significant loss of investor confidence in that area. And they managed to avert day zero, but only just. And they took a lot of criticism. I mean, the city of Cape Town took a serious amount of criticism. But now, a couple of years later, I would argue that the city of Cape Town is light years ahead of all the other metros in South Africa. They've got a firm plan in place. They've really woken up and smelt the roses. They've got a very sophisticated strategy that's well thought through. They are well on their way to becoming water secure. And when I say water secure, I'll talk about actually decoupling themselves from the vagaries of nature. So in other words, if there's a drought in the area, they will, in the not-too-distant future, be able to withstand that drought because they're kind of going off the surface water grid.
Give me a sense, Prof, what measures they've put in place to be able to get to that space.
Well, okay, what they've done is, firstly, they've had a good, hard, cold look at the realities that they're facing. And they've realized that they've run out of surface water. That's the first thing, the first big realization. Then the second thing that they've realized is that their population growth is a real serious factor. So they've got to get more water from somewhere. So where can they get it from? So they've had a serious look now at how to wean themselves off the rivers, because the rivers are all overgrown. And they're the first city in South Africa that's made a proper decision to go seawater desalination at scale. Not at Mickey Mouse level, not at 1.5 megaliter a day stuff, it's sort of 50 megaliter a day. That's 50 million liters a day, you know, that's kind of like an entry level a utility scale plant. And they're planning more than one of those. Then, of course, they also are capturing water from waste, which is only being done in one part in KZN. That's a very, very revolutionary thing that they're doing. And then they're also charging aquifers. So in other words, they're capturing water and they're putting it down aquifers and they're storing it away from dams where it's protected from evaporation. And then they've also got conjunctive use, so use of groundwater and surface water and desalination water altogether. So they've got a very, very comprehensive a mix of tools in their toolbox now, and they're busy raising funding for these various projects. But the plan is very robust, and I would honestly say that the city of Cape Town has turned the corner, and it's probably the example now for all the other metros in South Africa.
Well, Durban, and following very closely behind that is Johannesburg, and let me say Gauteng. But Durban, KwaZulu-Natal has been catastrophic in the rate, in other words, the speed with which they have fallen into deep crisis as far as water is concerned. We started off by hearing of sewage, raw sewage going into the oceans, but now we're hearing of fecal water going into household taps, a reality that is becoming all too close here in Gauteng. What's going on there?
Yes, okay. So if Cape Town is an example of having learned a lesson and turned the corner, Durban is an example of a catastrophe happening as we speak. So I would say that Durban is probably the first metro in South Africa to have failed. Durban is a failed metro. And when I say failed, it's unable to self-correct without external assistance. I cannot see it under its own steam coming up with a strategy and a plan. I just cannot see it happening. In fact, they're still reeling from the floods that happened in 2020. You know, they still haven't managed to get beyond that, and they're still dealing with the problems of the looters' war in 2021. So they've just not managed to make any inroads into the backlog. So Durban has failed. Then the next one that is teetering at the moment on the brink, I would argue, is Johannesburg. It hasn't quite failed yet. It's under severe pressure. But, of course, the significance about Johannesburg is that it is one of three major metros in Gauteng. And those three metros are the epicenter of probably 80% of the manufacturing in South Africa. So we're now talking about the manufacturing heartland. All goods that are manufactured in South Africa are most probably manufactured in one of those three metros. And we haven't even begun to talk about the implications of water supply disruption to the manufacturing sector and what that's going to do to labor relations, and more importantly to the flow of taxes into the fiscus. Because, you know, if there's an economic wobbly in the manufacturing sector, then there's all kinds of other knock-on effects into the economy. So I think that Johannesburg is not far behind, but it's still salvageable. And, we don't have...
What would need to happen, Prof, in Johannesburg to be able to salvage a situation that looks like it's going down the hill fast?
I think the first thing that you would need in Johannesburg is to have credible leadership. I just don't see any credible leadership on the playing field at the moment. You know, I mean, it's quite laughable when the mayor comes out and makes public statements to the effect that the system is better today or this week than it was last week, when all of the data tells us the exact opposite. You know, just because a person's in power doesn't mean to say they're actually in control. And here you have a perfect example of that. You know, a person all dressed up to pretend that they're the mayor, but actually not really being in control. So we need credible leadership. And the second thing that I think that I'm astounded by in the case of Gauteng is the fact that Rand Water is a world-class institution. It's the largest single bulk water supply of water in the world. It is a massive undertaking, and yet it has not entered the digital era. Can you believe that? So they are still running. They are running a utility on pocket calculators at best. You know, the most advanced digital platform is like a kind of pocket calculator. They don't yet have the ability to generate forecasts. You know, for diagnostics that'll tell you what system stability is likely to be like in a couple of hours into the future. And all of that technology is available today. So that's what surprised me. And I think coming out of this crisis in Gauteng, you're likely to see the transition of Rand Water into a more of a digitally integrated a system. Because remember, it's not only Rand Water that needs to be digitized. It's all of its customers, because three of the largest metros in the country are supplied by Rand Water. So you need to put a digital platform across that entire value chain so that they can all talk to each other and they can all know what's going on. So then no one's going to get a surprise and say, oh, guess what? There's a valve that's closed and we didn't know it for the last couple of days. You see, that's all because of the absence of a digital system.
Prof, I mean, all of this is stuff that we were warned about. I mean, I remember conversations you've had with my colleagues. I think you and I have had a conversation before many years ago, I think 8 years ago, about the fact that this was coming. Why didn't we do something about it?
I think the arrogance of power. You know, when you're in power and you're enjoying the fruits of what that power means, and you're driving in a motor car and you're protected by Blue Light Brigade people, and, you know, life doesn't get any better than that. Huh? You don't have to think about these things because, you know, there's a wonderful technical word for what I'm describing now, and that is the word hubris.
Yeah.
When politicians start believing their own hubris, you must know that very, very soon some kind of catastrophic collapse is not very far away.
Prof, this sounds very much like the crisis we find ourselves in at the moment, and that is the power, the electricity crisis, and at the center of it all is Eskom. Are we looking down the same barrel?
There's some fundamental differences. Look, I'm not an energy expert there. You must speak to my friend Chris Yellen. He knows what he's talking about there. But I think there's kind of a little bit of good news coming out of the Eskom space as far as I'm concerned. And so let's quickly just touch base on what there are a couple of good news stories there. So the first good news story is that Eskom is kind of going out of business because it's chased most of its customers away. So all of the serious electricity users have invested very heavily to get themselves at least insulated as best they can from Eskom. And that's played a very, very big role, firstly in the demise of Eskom, but it's also played a very big role in the continuation of their businesses. So what that's going to do now is exactly the same in the water sector. The water sector, you're going to start seeing independent service providers coming to the fore. And in fact, if we go back to the energy thing, there's new legislation that's just gone through now that has broken up or unbundled Eskom into different business units.
We're talking about that in the next half an hour.
Exactly. Yeah, So in other words, the independent service provider, that's there. The legislation's there. All we're going to do now is we're going to say, right, if we can do it for energy, we're going to do the same for water. Now the difference is that water, you can't just manufacture water, whereas you can kind of like, you know, you can burn coal and you can put up a wind turbine and generate electricity. You can't necessarily do that with water. So it's slightly different. But the important thing is that we're going to start seeing these independent service providers coming to the fore. And then the next thing that I think that I'm extremely optimistic about is there's been a recent judgment in the courts, in the high courts, that I'm paraphrasing what the judgment says now, but it effectively says that that a municipality is not the only or does not hold a monopoly on service provision for the citizens. In other words, citizens have a right to services, and if the municipality does not have the capacity to deliver those services, then the citizens have the right to procure those services from other service providers. Now, that is a monumental decision as far as I'm concerned, because that's also going to start feeding into these independent service providers. So I think in the not-too-distant future, you're going to start seeing these independent service providers coming forward, and you're going to start seeing all sorts of things happening, for example, around wastewater works. Wastewater works are going to become sort of unbundled, run as public-private partnerships, where you're going to start seeing the recovery of water from that waste and the recycling of that water back, for example, into industry rather than for potable use. So I'm actually quite optimistic that at the other side of this crisis, we're going to actually emerge as a much stronger economy than we are at the moment. But I'm afraid there's going to be a lot of pain between now and then.
Grant on the WhatsApp line says, this has nothing to do with water shortages, but everything to do with comrades who received tenders to replace water pipes, repair and maintain water pipes. They didn't do it because they deliberately obfuscated so that they could chow the money. So now there's a problem with the transportation of water, and now they make it appear to be a water shortage or drought issue. The dams and water shortage facilities, reservoirs are full. It can't be transported in pipes to our homes and businesses. That's all, says Grant. Would that be a fair assessment of the situation?
Well, yes, it's a view of the situation, and it's not an inaccurate view of the situation. We have, in fact, had the emergence of a thing called the tanker mafia, for example. Yep. And in fact, we just recently had an international manifestation of that, where an agreement has now been reached between comrades in South Africa and comrades in Zimbabwe to supply water to Messina, which is nothing more than the tanker mafia, but now diversifying into the pipeline business. So that happens. But of course, all of that happens at the expense of economic prosperity, job creation, and well-being. And surely this is what our liberation from our sordid and oppressive past must be all about. How can we accept that, you know, we're not going to reach our full potential as human beings just so that some comrades can feed something? So I don't want to sort of speak too politically here, but I think that that people are starting to get very, very angry as a result of what's happening in both the water and the energy space. And I think that anger is starting to come forward now. And I'm quite optimistic that coming out of this, we're going to see quite a fundamental change in the way that these resources are managed.
Professor Anthony Turton, professor at the Center for Environmental Management at the University of Free State. Thank you very much for your time.